Hi, I'm Leighlane Hines, and this is How to Fall Apart with the Irish Cancer Society. Every October, the ICS would typically hold coffee mornings around the country in order to raise funds and awareness for breast cancer, but this year that is not possible. It means that we need to find other ways of supporting the absolutely vital work that the Society does to ensure breast cancer patients and their families have access to support services. You can donate online to both help support breast cancer patients and back vital research. This episode is about treatment, the impact of breast cancer treatment, and the ways in which women learn to cope. I've spoken to consultant oncologist Dr. Kathy Kelly and Aisling Riley and Aileen Murphy about their experiences. As anyone who's called the Irish Cancer Society helpline in an absolute panic and received reassurance and advice in return will know, their services are invaluable to anyone who's experiencing cancer.
For a woman who has just been diagnosed with breast cancer, there are many factors to consider. And I suppose that the one thing I would say is that most women who develop breast cancer, they go on to live normal lives and live normal life expectancies, just like every other woman in the population. So it's really important to bear that in mind. The other thing is that when you're diagnosed with breast cancer, you'll probably be bombarded by people maybe who've had breast cancer before, know someone who's had breast cancer before, and have gone through all different types of treatments and different sequences of treatment. And I would caution you to say that, to caution women to say that breast cancer, it's made up of lots of different types of cancers, and the type of treatment you get depends on the type you have. It depends on we say stage, but that can mean different things for different people. But it means how big is the cancer? Is it just in your breast? Is it in your breast and your lymph nodes? Is it in another part of your body? And that will factor into the type of treatment you're going to get. Some people, for a number of different reasons, they might have their chemotherapy if they need it. So not all women need chemotherapy. They might have that first, and then they might have their surgery, or they might have their surgery first, and then they have their chemotherapy afterwards. Some women, we might give them some hormone treatment first, and then they might have their surgery. Some women with cancer in other parts of their body may not need surgery and may just go on either some oral medication or some IV chemotherapy or targeted drug medication. So it's complicated, and your best to and often it's a lot of information to receive at once, and so often it's over a series of meetings with all of the team. So that could be the breast surgeon, the medical oncologist, you'll be talking to your breast care nurses, and over a period of a couple of weeks, really, you'll kind of get to grips with what your treatment plan is, and that will be somewhat specific to you and your cancer type.
Okay. What are the things that you would see from your vantage point that women tend to be particularly anxious about as they're going into their treatment? And anything that might kind of reassure somebody?
I think ultimately people, if it's new to them, it's what to expect. Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier, most women get through this with no problems at all and come out the other end of it and get back to their normal lives. Mm-hmm. So it's that. Mm-hmm. And often if somebody... what somebody's concerned about when they're diagnosed might be, okay, do I need surgery? What type of surgery am I going to have? Mm-hmm. Is this cancer just to my breast? Is it another part of my body? Mm-hmm. They might be their concerns. Mm-hmm. But as time goes on, that might change depending on the treatment they're getting at the time. So when they're having chemotherapy, if they require it, it'll be, you know, what side effects can I have? Expect mm-hmm. while I'm on it, are there any long-term side effects? And then when they finish their chemotherapy, it may be, and they may go on to maybe a hormone treatment, what are the side effects of those? How long do I have to stay on these tablets? You know, I'm getting side effects, you know, how can we deal with them? And then there'll be a time when maybe their focus may be purely on what's their prognosis, what's the risk of their cancer returning, could that happen? Mm-hmm. Have they done absolutely everything possible to reduce that from happening, to reduce that risk? Other times they might be worried about, you know, if they have daughters, what's the risk of their daughter developing breast cancer, and so there's a wide variety of everybody is very different, a wide variety of concerns. Some people are worried about the effects of chemotherapy that chemotherapy could have on their body, and others are worried that they're not getting enough chemotherapy and maybe they're being undertreated. So there's a broad spectrum, and I suppose it just reflects that we're all very different on our perceptions and what we believe in, and understandings and prejudices are all a mixed bag. So while there are some general overall concerns, it can be very varied, and what one woman worries about might be doesn't factor for another person. So
if somebody is in beginning their chemo, something that's come up quite a bit is the worry over nausea. And is that always something that they can come back to their treatment center to?
Yes, it's funny. It's funny. Nausea, our drugs are so effective for nausea, so it actually rarely is an issue. Or if it is, it might be a day or so where someone feels nauseous. But certainly, yes, you hear a lot about it, and that's certainly a perception out there that people are awfully sick in terms of vomiting and nausea. But we have such powerful anti-nausea medication that it's not a huge challenge. And while we start everybody off on a standard set of anti-sickness medications, if they don't work, and in most cases they do work, but if anyone is still feeling sick or getting sick, we adjust them. And so there are so many different combinations, and our day ward nurses in particular are experts on adjusting those depending on the person and when their nausea is. So the way those regimens have been worked out is that there's sometimes an early onset nausea, and that happens within the first few days, and then sometimes there can be a later onset. So we have anti-sickness medications in there that will cover both of those. So I wouldn't necessarily worry about that, because that's something we're good at, thankfully.
Okay. And always check back in then. So obviously, if you are finding it too much.
Yeah, of course. Each time you come to the day ward, so before you start, if you need chemotherapy, before you start, there's usually a chemotherapy education session, either a one-on-one or with a group of people about to start. And so that's specifically a nausea is discussed, and all potential side effects are discussed at that visit. And then again, when you come to start the chemotherapy, you know, we'll go over that again, and each visit you'll be asked, you know, how did you get on, were there any particular days where you experienced any particular side effects. So because the chemotherapy, you get the same chemotherapy, you know a cycle of chemotherapy, it's the same drugs you're going to get 2 or 3 weeks later, and often you can predict, okay, from the first time I got it, I felt sick on this day, so then we know, okay, on that day this person might need an extra tablet maybe to ease that symptom.
Okay. Is hair loss an inevitability in breast cancer treatment, or not always the case?
No, it's not. And so some of our commonly given chemotherapy drugs, particularly for patients with early stage breast cancer, so people who are having what we call adjuvant treatment, so that's where they have had their breast surgery, or they're going to have some chemo and then have their breast surgery. For those regimens, commonly are associated with hair loss, and that happens generally quite quickly. If they get what would be a common regimen would be ACT, for example, and that hair loss usually happens quite quickly. There are some chemotherapy regimens for sure that aren't associated with hair loss, and sometimes in the metastatic setting where women have breast cancer in another part of their body and they're going to be living with breast cancer, for those patients they can go on a variety of treatments over many years, and often there's no associated hair loss.
Okay.
Some centres have what we call scalp cooling, mm-hmm. and that's where a cold cap where a cold cap is put on their head before their treatment, and then during their treatment, and for a short period afterwards. And for some women, that can be very effective in preventing hair loss. But it's available in some centres. It does mean the person is in the chemotherapy day ward a little bit longer than if they weren't having it. Mm. So that's a downside for us when we're trying to treat lots of patients. Mm. And some people don't tolerate it. It's not very pleasant, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
I think the most common questions we would be asked is, do I have to isolate myself, even before COVID now, do I have to isolate myself from members of my family, from young children, from my pets? Can I go out? Could I go out to dinner? Can I go to any social events? And if, in most cases, when somebody is receiving chemotherapy, so adjuvant chemotherapy or any type of chemotherapy, I would encourage women to try and keep their normal schedule, so their normal activities of daily living, and not to change that radically. So if they want to go out and they feel okay, they go out, and if they want to do something or meet somebody, they do that. Now, obviously, with COVID, that's a whole other area, and we all have to limit our contacts with people. But in a non-COVID scenario, you try and keep your lifestyle as much as you can to normal. Yes, there may be days where you don't feel great and you might feel tired and you need to rest, and you do that. So you listen to your own body. But otherwise, you know, you still go for a walk with your dog, you go out with your friends, you do all those things. You don't have to, you don't live in a bubble. Now, it may be that you don't want to, and that's fine. But I mean, you have to go on living. You're going to get, this is a temporary period of your life. If it's an adjuvant treatment, if you've been treated for early stage breast cancer, you're going to have to get back to normal at some point. So, mm-hmm. so don't, I would favor not changing my life too drastically if that's possible.
Getting ready for holidays, and I was in the shower, and I was actually shaving under my arms, and I could feel the lump, and it felt a little bit different. And it was one of those that my first reaction was to take my hand away,
yeah.
so that I couldn't feel it anymore, which is really ridiculous. But it didn't feel right. It didn't sit well with me in my head. But I said, I was going on holidays a few days later, and I said I'd leave it be until I came back from holidays.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in the back of my mind, and I said it to my mother, and it was different. I never felt a lump like that before.
And were you working for the screening?
So I suppose I would be very good about following up
mm-hmm.
about anything that I would find, and I would go for all my tests and all that. So I would be breast aware.
Mm. And you were getting routine mammograms anyway, were you?
I had my previous mammogram was July 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, the previous year. Yeah. So I'm what would be known as a true interval. The way you're meant to have your screening every 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
My lump came in between. The screening is designed because not a whole lot normally happens in the 2 years, but I went against that. So a lump appeared. So I went to get it checked the day I kind of came home from holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So there's about 2 weeks from finding the lump to going about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was got a referral out to CUH,
mm-hmm.
out to the Orchid Centre, which is their breast centre.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what they call a triple assessment. So you get your mammo, your ultrasound, and got a clinical exam and a biopsy. But they could see straight away in the ultrasound that they could see the cancer. Once they went over the lump. So they're really gentle in how they explain it to you, and they break the news gently to prepare you for. They tell you they have to take a biopsy, and they prepare you for when you come into clinic the next week that you need to bring somebody, and you're getting news that you don't really want to be hearing.
Yeah.
But it was done so, I was very calm. I was extremely calm about it.
Were you?
There was, yeah, I was. And I always thought, say prior to being diagnosed, I would thought, Jesus, so, you know, my biggest fear was always, God, what if I got cancer? You know, you'd find a lump, and I'm great for finding lumps of bumps. Mm. But there was a calmness that surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew I had to deal with it. The hardest part was I had to come home to tell my parents.
And did you tell them? Did you tell them there and then, look, I think this is what's happening? Or did you wait until you got the results?
No, I had to tell them that I'd been told that it was cancer. Like, it was just the next week was going to be telling me the grading and treatment and all that. Yeah, so you had to wait. That was on a Wednesday, and I had to drive up home because I was I wasn't in a position to drive. I wasn't safe enough to drive. So I came up on the Thursday, and I had to tell them, sit them down and tell them. And then I had told my brother the previous night. Mm. So we came up with a ploy as to why I was going up home. Reason to be up in midweek, you know.
Yeah.
So, but it was, no, they were.
No, it's very hard telling your parents something like that.
Oh, God, it was awful. Mm. It was horrendous. But they were, they've been great. Like, my mother has been to every, she came to every chemo session with me.
Did she?
Yeah, she was brilliant. And she couldn't come to radiotherapy because that was through lockdown.
Yeah.
So she was really upset being here while I was heading off to that. But it was, she's just been brilliant. She's been amazing. Like.
And were you, you're living in Cork, but did you go to move in with your parents when you started the chemo, or how did it work?
I moved in after surgery. I live on my own.
Yeah.
So I knew the treatment might be unwell with treatment. So I just asked, could my treatment be in Limerick? So they transferred my treatment, my chemo to Limerick. I had my surgery in Cork, but they transferred my treatment to Limerick. And I'm with them since, because I knew I need the support. And it was brilliant. It was brilliant. And looking at what's happened since with the lockdown and all that, It has worked out really well. I had surgery on the 2nd of September. It's what they call a wide local excision with axillary clearance. Okay. So they take the lump and they take an area around it, because it wasn't just confined to the lump. Okay. It had spread and it had gone into my lymph nodes. So they took my lymph nodes. There were 35 lymph nodes and 5 of them were cancerous, but 30 weren't.
Okay.
So that's the way I looked at it.
Yeah.
I had to be, I think I had to wait 2 weeks before they were discharging from there, you know, with getting the stitches out and the drain. You come home with a drain.
Mm.
So you have to, and I never thought I'd be able to, you have to empty your drain yourself every day and you have to measure what you're taking out.
Mm.
But Mum and Dad moved in with me, which was fantastic. Mum was cooking dinners and looking after my house. Like, I didn't have to do anything. I had neighbours calling in, so it was like, I'm very lucky. Like, I know how lucky I am.
You were really supportive. Can I ask, at that time, how you managed, if there was fear? Because it can be kind of difficult to discuss something like that with your parents, because you're kind of mutually protecting each other from that stuff. Do you know the way sometimes it's easier to discuss with like a partner or a friend or something? Were you very fearful at that stage, and did you feel isolated, or were there people you could talk to about it?
There was people that I could talk to. Like, I'm a talker. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
I have to talk, and I can't keep it all in.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I was able to talk to colleagues who were friends, who knew. Like, it was one of my colleagues that found my cancer.
Okay.
Like, she had done the ultrasound, so she.
Okay.
I was able to talk to her, and I was able to explain all that. But I did go for I went for counselling.
Okay.
With through the support centre out in UHL.
Okay.
That I went for counselling there, just to be able to talk it out and to make sure. I seemed very comfortable with I seemed at peace with my diagnosis and with everything that I've been told I was having, and I just wanted to make sure that I really was, that I it wasn't all this bravado kind of thing. I had to make sure that I was in the right place.
That was very kind of mindful and in the like very did it turn out that you were genuinely accepting it?
I was genuinely at peace with this. I see, I talk so much and I explain, I talk my feelings out. And I wasn't keeping anything bottled in. And I spoke to people that had been, that have had breast cancer.
Okay.
So, you know, that you get comfort, you get comfort from that because you see someone that has been through it.
Yeah.
And that they're doing okay and that they explain the different bits and pieces. Like one of my friends, she gave me this book and she explained to me that even the different foods that I would be able to, that I should eat when I'm going through chemo, because one of the versions, I had two different chemos, but one of them makes you very sick. And so she was just giving me tips. So it was all those kind of things. So I'm doing that in turn for people now that are going through breast cancer, because it just, it makes it easier when you know that somebody else has been in that boat. Not that you're wishing it on someone,
that
somebody else knows exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's invaluable. So your lump was removed and then you moved to Limerick and began your chemotherapy in October?
October, yes.
Yeah, and were you nervous about starting it, or how did you feel about starting it?
Oh, I was very nervous. The week leading up to it, I didn't know. You know, if you can't sit still, you'd sit down, you want to stand up, you didn't know, did you want to relax, did you want to be doing something? It was, I was all over the place. I really was now. And the fact that I was having a port put in on the same day that I was starting chemo, because my veins they weren't good enough. And I had to go in and have that done. So I really now was all over the place. And to be in early, Friday was my chemo day, and I had to be in early. So it was, I contacted the Irish Cancer Society then to get for the volunteer drive.
Oh yeah.
And a lady, this lovely, lovely lady, Sheila, contacted me. I think it's the day before they contact you, just to find out where you're living and to be able to collect you, you know, to make all the arrangements. She was so nice to me on the phone. She really put me at ease. She collected me that morning. I couldn't talk. I was just so nervous and my stomach was doing butterflies. And she just really calm and really nice and chatted away. And she told me she had a port in and it was fine. And she was lovely. She really settled me. It was it was a perfect introduction for going into the chemo session. She really was. Now she was fabulous.
And for somebody who might be listening to this and phasing into chemo, could you maybe just talk through what the experience is like, just if they've got a horrible sense of the unknown?
The very first day that I went in, I remember sitting in the room and I turned to my mother and said, I can't believe that I'm here. I can't believe this is happening. But there was a sense of calm there.
Okay.
It wasn't, while it's a clinical setting, there's a nice aura there, and there's four chairs to a table. So there's 24 people having chemo at each session. These lovely armchairs that you're sitting in. And at that time, we were allowed to bring visitors with us. But I had great laughs there. I've made friends that I'm still in contact with since chemo, because what they do, well, in Limerick, what they do anyway is, you're assigned to a table. So you go to different tables each week. So you're getting to meet different people and telling stories. And it was really positive. And they come down to you first thing in the morning. They come down, they have to take your blood to make sure that you're okay, to get chemo, and that your bloods are okay for that. So in the meantime, then these two lovely girls come around and they you can get tea and coffee and biscuits. So that's how your morning starts. I used to have to get my port. They used to have to access my port. So it's just a case of getting this attachment that had to be pushed onto me, and then they can link me up to take my bloods. So it's really when you're waiting for your bloods, everyone's swapping stories. Mm. So you're all just sitting on the table, and it's just relaxed. Everyone's in the same boat. Mm. So there's nobody knows anything about anyone else until people start, you know, someone wants to say, but it doesn't matter where you work. It doesn't matter what you kind of did. Sometimes in what you'd say in a conversation, sometimes is, oh, well, in the real world, I work in such and such a place. Mm. You know, that would be the kind of comment. But it was fun. I know, and my friends would laugh at me when I'd say it. They'd say, chemo was fun, Aileen, really. It really, really was. And then when the nurses would come down to you, when your bloods would be back, they'd say, okay, your bloods are back, and you're good to go. Every time the nurse would say that, you'd hear them say, yes! And people would laugh afterwards and say, we're cheering that we're allowed to have chemo. So then it's just when you're linked up then for your chemo, you could walk around, like, say, once you had walk around within the unit. I found it fine, and then the girls would come around again then with lunch. So we were all there wondering what sandwiches we were picking. This became your, you know, your kind of focus. But it was, I know it sounds crazy. Like, some people think it, aliens, a bit sad. But I did enjoy my chemo days.
Okay.
And I used to wear something new to chemo session. I used to get dressed up, and I found that very empowering. I used to get up early, I'd do my face, get dressed up, and I opted for hats rather than wigs. So I had hats with different bandanas that I put around them to match my outfit. So I made it an outing.
Yeah. How did you feel about your hair for that?
I was okay. I was I used to go to the hairdressers every week. Mm. I loved my hair, and I really took care of my hair. And I thought I would have gone to pieces. But what happens is, when your hair is ready to fall out, your head is hurting. It's like it's preparing you for your hair to come out. And when your hair starts coming out, it feels horrible. There's a horrible condition to your hair. And when you see it starting to come out, you're ready to have it taken out. So that was starting to happen. And I had an appointment with the hairdresser, and she had put me down for blow dry / shave. Mm-hmm. And when I went in, she said, okay, what? And she booked me in for the last session, so there wouldn't be anyone else there. Like, she was really, really caring about it. And she said, what do you want to do? And I said, just take it off. Because it was annoying me. So I got it shaved, and I felt I was taking control of the situation with my hair.
Yeah.
That I made the decision when it was coming out. I wasn't waiting until there was piles of it falling off me. And it felt grand. My nephew, he was only 11 at the time, and he offered to come with me to get my head shaved. Sorry.
No, you're absolutely fine. Take your time.
Sorry, Leah.
Honestly, not at all. Take your time.
So he said, Alex said, well, I'll come with you when you're getting your hair done. And he said, would that be okay? And I said, I'll just ask your dad, my brother. So I just asked dad to come. So my brother was fine. So he came down, and he had the sense to know to come with me, that, you know, that this was a big thing.
What age is
and
he?
And he sat there, 11. So now we'd be really, really good buddies, like, we're really, really close. And he came with me, and we were chatting, going down in the car, but all those kinds of things. And he took photos when it was being done.
Did he?
And yeah, and then he said to me, I took photos, but he said, I deleted them because he said it's private.
Yeah.
So the girls were very good. Like, they gave him lollies down there, and they were all about him.
Yeah.
So it was very relaxed, because the two girls down in the hairdressers, Jen and Liga, are lovely. They're really, really lovely girls. They were really lovely to Alex as well. you know, so it became then, it became us chatting.
Yeah.
And he was involved in it. And then there was a bit of, there was a bit of laughing because Jen said she'd cut it up short first so I'd see what it'd be like when it was growing back.
Yeah.
And then she kept saying, are you okay? Are you sure about this? And like, yeah, just get rid of it now. Yeah. So then we started having a bit of a laugh and she shaved down the middle of my head. Just to make it, when it was getting shorter. So we were all having a giggle about it. So that was, very, you know, it was funny. But coming home then, like I wore a hat because I was freezing without my hair. And when I came in then, it was that moment kind of, Dad answered the door and he just said, you can show me in your own time. And I just took my hat off and I said, look here, this is me. This is me now. But I'll tell you, it made getting ready, oh geez, you're the chemo the next day. So all I did was wash my head. There was no blow drying hair or straightener.
Sometimes when you talk to people, they describe how as the chemo progresses or as the treatment progresses, they become less and less able to kind of put on a cheerful face or a brave face or to interact with those around them as it kind of takes a toll. Did you find that or how did you find it by the time you were coming to the end of the chemo treatment?
I didn't have a problem with it, like that I found it harder to deal with people. My only problem was, you get this thing. People spoke about chemo brain,
okay.
And I thought it was a made up thing. It's genuine. You get I have to write notes down more so than I'd always have a to do list,
yeah.
But like everything has to go into the phone. Like if I have to meet someone, things that you would normally think of, I had to write that down. I'd go upstairs. And I couldn't remember why I went up the stairs. I just come back down and it was just really foggy. So that would be the only thing, but I never found, I was meeting people the whole time. Like I had a great social life. No, it was all daytime stuff because I would fade by night.
Yeah.
But I found, what I was doing was people saying, you know the way normally people say, oh, we must meet up, we must do coffee.
Yeah.
You know, before you'd put that off, I was doing it.
Yeah.
I was going, if people say, would you make coffee? Okay, yeah, when?
Yeah.
And you'd make your things. So I found I've been meeting people. I've made new friends since I was diagnosed. And I've strengthened other friendships.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting to meet people more and spend more time with people. And I found it a better quality in my life.
Okay.
Because my perspective totally changed.
Yeah. How did COVID affect that then?
COVID was a right pain now, to be honest. I finished chemo on the 28th of February. So I had these great plans.
Yeah.
I had family in Dublin, so I was going up to spend a week up there and I was going to be meeting them and we were going out and all these great plans and then the rumblings started about it's not being safe and all that. So it was all those celebrations, those post-chemo celebrations, and then that was annoying me at first, but then it became more serious that we realised like the vulnerability.
Yeah.
And I did feel very vulnerable. It was the first time I had felt vulnerable since I was diagnosed.
Okay.
And it was this sense of not being able to go places. And I had to go to, my radiotherapy started during COVID. So I could see the contrast between the two treatments. Like chemo was great, you know, and my mother could come with me and there was loads of people in there and it was all this wonderful kind of process. But then radiotherapy, you go, no, they did it as easily as they could, like them, and I felt very safe there.
Yeah.
And I was given the option. They did ring me beforehand and say, look, would you prefer, are you happy to come in for radiotherapy or would you prefer to put it off till this is over? Because we thought that this might last
back
as
in
long.
April,
So I said, no, I was happy to go. So what you do when you go to the hospital, you have to ring to be triaged, you have to go into what was the support centre and you answer your COVID questions and you get your temperature checked. And then you go back to your car and you wait and you're called when it's your turn to go up. So that you're not in the waiting room. You just wait outside the room then for radiotherapy. And when you went in, they were actually, you could see them physically clean. They were cleaning down between patients and changing the paper that you put on the beds.
Yeah.
And so I felt very safe there.
Yeah.
And it felt very, really, really clean. But like, we cocooned here and, oh my God, it was painful. We used to laugh. When I was going to radiotherapy, it was a trip out. I used to take the long way to drive just so that I could be out. Yeah. And I used to drive slow. I was pain to drive. I used to drive a bit slower so I could just soak it all up, because I couldn't go anywhere. And like, I missed my nephews and my niece. I missed being able to hug them. Like, my nephews used to come over here with the shopping. My brother would bring it over and they'd be down the driveway.
Yeah.
And it was, oh my God, it was tart. I found that.
Yeah.
I found that awful. And my support network changed insofar as people that I was meeting and all that. It all became phone calls. Mm. And it's lovely. It was great to have support, but there's nothing beats hugging someone and sitting down and having a chat and all that. I really found that hard.
How did you feel by the end of the 23 sessions?
Oh my God, I was ecstatic. I was, the excitement on the last morning, I remember I was so excited.
Yeah.
There wasn't, like, with my last chemo session, there was trepidation and there was, you know, there was a sense of loss in a way, because I knew I was saying goodbye to these people, that I had become friendly with the staff and, you know, that, and there, I felt cocooned there and it was lovely. Whereas radiotherapy was like, oh, thank God this is over.
Yeah.
And my session was, I remember being delighted, you different times, they were keeping us in pods. So your sessions were at different times, like you could be at 8:45 one morning and you could be 6:30 the next evening. Yeah. So I remember hoping that my session would be early, so I had a 9:00 session.
Okay.
So, but then when I came home, there was, my mother was waiting on the end of the drive, and she cheered, and my next door neighbour cheered, and then there was bouquets of flowers had been delivered, so they were all here waiting for me, and we had a family Zoom call that day. It was arranged, like, so they could see me, and we were all having a chat, and we all had a glass of bubbly to celebrate and everything. So it was a real celebration day.
Yeah,
definitely. It was, oh my God, it was like a weight had been lifted off me. I was so happy. I really can't describe. I was in this bubble for a few days afterwards of just delight and excitement. It was fabulous. It really, really was fabulous.
Yeah, that's great. And how do you feel now, Eileen?
I feel good. My energy is okay-ish. I'd be the person that does loads and loads of things, and I get frustrated sometimes that I do something and I get tired, and then I say, you have to check in with yourself and say, hold on a minute. Look at what your body's been through. You're not being a flake by lying down on the couch and taking 20 minutes for yourself. So it's learning. You have to learn how to accept that your body has changed, and you have to learn to accept you don't have the same energy levels.
Yeah.
But now, in saying that, I exercise every day, because it's for my mental health. It's great, but it's also, it does increase your chances of the cancer not coming back.
Yeah.
So I go between, I have a stationary bike, so I do spinning classes online, or I go, there's a lovely walk along by the riverbank, I go on that, or I have this other app that I do cardio classes.
Okay.
So I do those, and I'm doing DIY jobs for my mother and painting things, or
okay,
doing different bits and pieces around the place, and then I'm back to meeting people,
okay,
which is great, and I can see my nephews and my niece, so it's all, it's good. Like, I'm very content with myself, and it's definitely, it has slowed me down into, you know, this need to be running and racing. While I'm going doing things, I'm doing them at a different pace, and I'm much happier. I'm actually happier myself since I was diagnosed, because you cut out the crap, I suppose, really, and the things that would have bothered me before don't upset me as much, don't bother me as much, because I know it sounds very cliche, but I have a different perspective on things, and I am definitely much happier.
Was married in April 2018, so I suppose everyone kind of has that plan, you know, married and the next step is kids. So that was our next plan, which was to have kids, and we have bought our own house, and it was just the next process, step in the process, I suppose, of everyone's life is usually, you know, the normal, get married, have your own house, have kids, you know. So that was our next step, and I was looking forward to that until I got hit by a bus, basically, and been told I had breast cancer.
And tell me how that happened. Did you find a lump?
Yes, so in July of last year, 2019, I had been going to the gym and kind of trying to get fit and stuff, and I had a pain in my chest, little sharp pains, whatever, and kind of passed normal marks and thought I had done something in the gym and hurt myself. I thought it was just muscular, and passed normal marks on it. And then maybe a week or two later, I find a lump on my breast, and I was in denial. I didn't want to admit it was there. Kind of said nothing, found it on a Thursday evening and said nothing. And then on the Monday, I told my husband, and he was like, Ashton, you should go to the doctor, like, you know. So then on the, that was the Monday night. So on the Tuesday morning, then I rang the doctor, like, for an appointment, and got an appointment for the following morning, which is Wednesday, and then went in to her, and it all kind of started from then. She felt the lump and she referred me to St. Vincent's for an ultrasound.
Okay. And how did you feel at that stage in terms of anxiety?
I was fine when I hadn't told anybody. I was like, okay, haven't told anyone, it's not happening. It's, you know, it's fine, there's nothing there. Then the more, like, I'd said it to my husband, then it was kind of like, okay, it might be something. I kind of started afresh. And then after I'd went into the doctor, then and she had wrote urgent on the letter and faxed it to St. Vincent's, then I kind of started to get very worried. I was like, oh my God, this is something to worry about. Like, you know, my own doctor had breast cancer before this herself. So I kind of was like, okay, she knows what she's looking for and she's worried about this because she's writing urgent on it. So I was like, okay, I should be worried about this. And it was kind of like, it was like, I don't want it to be real, but I kind of think there is something to worry about here. So I started to panic a bit.
How long between the Tuesday doctor appointment and the ultrasound in St. Vincent's was there?
The doctor's appointment was the Wednesday, and then my following appointment, my doctor, or my appointment for my ultrasound was the following Tuesday, so not even a week.
Okay.
By the time I had got back to work that Wednesday, and I had went on my tea break, I had an appointment in Vincent's.
Okay.
So, like, it was only a matter of, like, hours, like, 2 hours before I had got my appointment in Vincent's.
And what, tell me about that. So what was the appointment like and the ultrasound?
So when I went into and you check in with the receptionist, and the receptionist asked me what I was here for, and I said, I don't know, because the doctor kind of mentioned ultrasound, mammogram, biopsy, and it kind of all went over my head and I didn't know what my initial thing going was for. And she said to me then, oh, I'll check on the computer. And while that was uploading, she goes, oh, you're far too young, you'll not be getting a mammogram anyway, you know, it'll just be an ultrasound. So that kind of calmed me a bit, and I was like, okay, it's not to worry about, she's here every day, she's seeing women in and out all the time, like, you know, she's bound to know something. But then back out to the waiting room and sitting there with my husband, and then I was called in for the ultrasound, and the woman doing the ultrasound, then she only had the thing on my breast, and she was like, okay, I'm sending you for a mammogram. So that kind of was like, oh my God, there's something wrong. And I kind of panicked then. I was like, all my emotions kind of was welling up, like I was in tears. I didn't know what to think. I was like, oh my God, this is definitely something to worry about. I was like, oh my God, is it cancer? Is it not? Like, why are they sending me for a mammogram? But you didn't have time to think about it. I was straight in then, got the mammogram done. So she brought the two of us into the room, and then there was a consultant there as well. So there was no waiting. That kind of scared me. I was like, nobody goes to the hospital for a routine kind of procedure to make sure everything's okay and then meets a consultant on the same day.
Yeah.
I said, like, as I said to my husband afterwards, I said, a consultant isn't just sitting around waiting for somebody to meet somebody. Like, you know, they're paid big bucks, like, and they're not just sitting there with nothing to do, you know. I was like, oh God. So he didn't really say anything. He just asked how I got on or if I had any questions. Mm-hmm. But at that stage, I was just kind of like overwhelmed. It was all just, well, what's happening? Like, you know, it was as if it was just all over my head. It was completely over my head. I didn't know. It took a while to, you know, a few days even afterwards to kind of sit down and think, like, what's after happening? Like, you know, is this me? Is it, you know, you nearly expect it to be watching a film or something that you see in a, like, you know, that it's happening to somebody else and not you. So I started on the 12th of August, which is a Monday. Mm-hmm. And I was being started with one type for the first 4 weeks, and it was every 2 weeks. Okay. And I thought that, I thought when I got the first one, it wasn't too bad. Like, I was going in and I was terrified, absolutely terrified. Mm. I didn't know what to expect, even though there'd been through stuff, but everybody doesn't get all the side effects.
Yeah.
Or may not get, and everybody is different. Mm-hmm. If you're getting the same drugs and the same everything, your body reacts different. Or everybody's body reacts different. So I didn't know, well, was I going to be sick? Was I not going to be sick? Were the tablets going to work? Were they not going to work? It was very, very strange. But I went into the first one and I was fine. Everyone had different side effects, which was a big shock to me. My first one, I felt sick maybe for a day or so afterwards. And then I'm tired, very tired. But I just expected that to get progressively worse. Mm-hmm. For the second one, considering I'm getting the same drugs and everything was the same. But it didn't. I had different side effects for every single treatment or every single dose of chemo that I got. Like the next one, I might have had a really metallic taste in my mouth, as if I was, like, after putting a coin in my mouth, like, all day. Mm-hmm. It was really strange. And then, like, the next one, I might have had really bad constipation. All the side effects were completely different. Taste gone after some of them, which is terrible. Like, it was very, very different. And I just assumed that, you know, the first one, your side effects would just get worse and worse. Then, you know, the same side effects would just get worse. I didn't expect it to be different side effects every time. Tiredness was probably the one that was most consistent. Like, it just got worse every week.
Really? Would you be knocked out for a day or two? Like, would you have to take to the bed, or how did it kind of pan out each week?
I kind of didn't pan out in the bed every week, because I didn't want it to be then that I was in bed all day.
Yeah.
I suppose I'm lucky in that it was only myself and my husband in the house. So, like, I could lie about in the couch, like, and it was only him there. Like, I'd know, yeah, nobody else there kind of annoying me, or not annoying me, but, you know, you got your peace and quiet if I lay down on the couch, like.
Yeah.
So I would have laid down on the couch for maybe Any time that I felt exhausted and tired, like I lay on the couch, maybe it could be half an hour some days. Mm-hmm. Some days it could be 2 or 3 hours. Mm-hmm. But I just tried not to go to bed, because then I'd stay in bed all day.
Okay.
Whereas if I lay on the couch, I knew it was only going to be for a short term. I actually had to get, I didn't get the last one. Because my white blood cells were far too low.
Okay.
And at that stage, I was after missing 2 weeks, one because of a blood transfusion and another one because of my white blood cells being too low, even though I was getting an injection 3 days a week.
Okay.
After my treatments.
Okay.
At that stage, I just had enough. Okay. I told them that day, I was like, enough, I just don't want any more. I turned around and told them, I said, if you're telling me I'm coming back here for treatment next week, I said, I'm not, I've had enough. Mm-hmm. I just got sick and tired of it. I was just so tired.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it anymore. I was like, no more.
Yeah.
That was the final line. I was like, no, I'm not doing this. Because I was up at like 5 o'clock to go to treatment every Monday.
Yeah.
And at that stage it was every week, it wasn't every 2 weeks. I was just exhausted.
When you finished the chemo, how did your body feel physically in the few weeks afterwards?
Drained, absolutely drained. No energy, like absolutely no energy. And you know, you think you have energy, but it's when you look back on it, you're like, oh God, no, I absolutely had no energy at that stage. It's like, it was even like when I needed the blood transfusion, like, you know, the nurses asked me that day, like, how do you find your energy? Are you out of breath walking upstairs? Mm. And I was after using the stairs up in the hospital that day, up to the third level. And I was fine. And it was then after I got the blood transfusion, I was like, okay, I need to go back down and tell them doctors I didn't need that blood transfusion because the lift it gave me. Okay. But it's only afterwards that you just see this.
Yeah.
It's very hard to tell when you're in that state because it just gets progressively worse. It's not like today you've loads of energy and you can go out and go for
a
10-mile walk and then tomorrow you can't do anything. You know, it's not like that. It's progressively getting worse, so you don't notice it as much.
So what happened next then in terms of treatment?
So then I had surgery in February. Yeah, I had a lumpectomy and then and just sentinel node removal. The procedure itself is fine. I was lucky enough that way, I suppose, in that I had a very good surgeon, and I'm not left with really big scars. I suppose he kind of hid the scars. It's under my breast, so that I'm not looking at it all the time. Or like, you know, if I look in the mirror, like, you know, I have to look for it, you know, rather than it being visible the whole time. The nurse that was given the, going through all the things of like what would happen or what might happen you through chemo, had said to me to give myself 14 days or my hair will start falling out. And I was like, I when they had told me, like, you know, my hair will fall out, I was like, okay, you know, it'll gradually fall out, you know. I didn't expect it to just come out in clumps. And then I was like, how can they know that it's going to be 14 days? You know, like, everybody has, as they had said to me, everybody has different side effects, and some of them might affect people and some of them might affect others. I said, how can they be so sure it's going to be out in 14 days? Like, you know, it's going to start falling out in clumps in 14 days. I said, like, that I was like, they can't know that. But they did. Like, when I was going up for my second treatment, like, you know, the night before I went up for my second treatment, I was sitting on the couch, like, and I would have, like, my hair was long, my hair was below my shoulder, and I would have ran my hand through my hair, mm-hmm. and it was coming out in lumps, like, and I wasn't pulling it, like, I was just running my hand through my hair, like, and it was coming out in lumps, And I was like, oh my God, they're so right. Like, you know, I didn't want to believe them. Like, yeah. So then I bit the bullet and went and got my head shaved then the following Wednesday and got a wig.
Okay. So you decided to kind of take control of it and get it done yourself.
Yeah, well, I knew it was going to all come out. I said to myself I didn't want to get it shaved until I seen it coming out. Mm. But once it started coming out, I was like, okay, they are right. Mm. You know, I should have just listened to them in the beginning, but you kind of don't want it. I think your hair is part of who you are.
Yeah.
It, you know, like that's who you are. You look completely different, like without it. Mm. It's part of your identity, and I didn't want to lose that.
Has it started growing back?
Yes. Yes, it has, thankfully. It started growing back. When I finished chemo,
okay.
On Valentine's we went out for my husband brought me out for dinner, and that was the first night that I went out without anything on my head.
Really?
And I haven't went back since. I haven't put a wig on, I haven't put a hat on since. And I just kind of, it was starting to grow back at that stage. Now, there wasn't much, but I said, you know what, this is the start of it. And I said, you know what, this is who I am. So
yeah,
I'm not going to change it.
Yeah.
And it's growing back. So
you said there that they said, they told you the chemo had done its work. Can you remember how you felt when they said that? Did it sink in?
No, not really.
Hmm.
It didn't sink in at all. I was kind of like, oh, are you sure? Like, I couldn't believe it until I had the surgery done, I think.
Mm.
Until the surgery results came back.
Mm.
Even though there was no lump there, they had to take tissue to make sure that there was no cells, I suppose cancer cells, in the area. I was kind of... Has it really? Is it just that they're not seeing it? Is it too small that they can't? It didn't sink in. You know, it's like being told in the beginning that you have cancer. You're afraid to believe it.
Yeah.
I said to myself, kind of, okay, I'll wait to see how surgery goes, and then if it comes back all clear, then I'll believe that the chemo done its work.
Can you tell me about the radiotherapy started in April, is that right?
It was fine though. It was like you were in and out in 15 minutes.
Okay.
It was nothing in comparison to chemo. Like, it was a walk in the park for me. Now I understand people do, like other people have tough times and burn and react a lot to the chemo or to the radiotherapy. Mm-hmm. But I didn't. I actually got away lucky with it. But then I moisturise daily. I moisturise morning and night every day.
Anything you would say to someone who's just about to start out on their treatment? Might feel
take like all the help. Take all the help you can get.
Okay.
If somebody offers to cook you dinner, take it.
Hmm.
You know, if little things like that. Find your support network.
Hmm.
I was very lucky in that my husband is so good, you know, and family were so good, and friends, you know. I think that you need to have the people there that you can just rely on. I kind of relied a bit on social media as well.
Okay.
It was a social media group for young people with breast cancer, and I find that very helpful just for little things, like, you know, if something was annoying you and you didn't know whether this was normal or other people had it or different effects like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it easy to go to that page and see, rather than ringing up the hospital. Yeah. I have this, is this normal? You know, I'd be a person like that wouldn't like to be putting people out anyway. So I find that I didn't like to ring the hospital asking these silly questions, or what you thought were silly questions.
Mm-hmm.
If it was just something that was classed as normal, or, you know, that other people had it. even the likes of this, like, you know, I'm able to talk about it, and I'm able to talk about how I felt throughout it, whereas, you know, a few months ago, I wouldn't have been able to do this without breaking down tears, really. And dealing with how I'm feeling is a lot easier now than, whereas I would have just brushed it under the carpet, oh, it's in the past, forget about it. Mm-hmm. Whereas now I'm actually, you know, going back and seeing how I felt about these things, and I suppose living with it now rather than brushing it under the carpet.
Every cancer story is unique, but hopefully the interviews for this series will prove that there are threads of commonality that can be pulled from each, which can provide support. I hope that this episode has brought you some level of comfort if you are experiencing or know someone who's experiencing breast cancer. If you've been affected by any of the issues we've discussed on this podcast, you can contact the Irish Cancer Society Cancer Support Line on 1800 200 700 or visit cancer.ie. You can donate online at cancer.ie to both help support breast cancer patients and back vital research. This series is in conjunction with the Irish Cancer Society as part of this year's Cups Against Breast Cancer campaign, which is proudly supported by Centra.